Good.
When did you arrive here in Scotland, and how old were you when you came?
Well, first of all, I did not arrive initially in Scotland, but in England with the kinder transport. I had been working for quite some time in agriculture as a farm labourer or farm pupil, whatever you like. I can enlarge on that later if you want me. In Scotland itself, the first time I came to Scotland was in 1944, in June, early in June 1944. After I'd been called up, I say called up because I'd volunteered in May. I had some problem in volunteering in May simply because I was in a reserved occupation and I had to say that I was a hay cutter. That was apparently not enough reserved, and so I got in. So I came here, and the first time in 1944, I spent 6 weeks being in general training in Maryhill Barracks, and from there, then after 6 weeks, I went to Colchester and joined the Ochsenbach-like infantry, light infantry. If you want me to continue this aspect very quickly, and after a short time in there, I was there 3 or 4 months, the opportunity came to volunteer for us. Special services. I volunteered both for commandos and the parachute regiment. The parachute regiment needed people at that time because they just lost a lot of people in Arnhem, I guess. Mm-hmm. But in any case, they called me first and I became a paratrooper there.
Yes, and did you ever have to go out with a plane in battle? Did you have a chance of showing off your skills?
Not really, because the war was coming towards an end at that time. We were standing by, we were not used at that time, and then there came the European theatre disappeared. I had an opportunity initially, or I thought I had one, but it didn't work out to drop onto Norway at that time. But it didn't work out. I was with the intelligence officer, and I was in the intelligence section of the Paris and at that time. And then we put aside the battalion. It was moved aside, moved to Ockham, amongst other things. And then we were going to go to the Far East. The Seaborne Party had already gone to the Far East at that time, and then the Japanese war came to an end. And for a short time, I was trying to learn enough Japanese to make sense of any maps that I could find. And instead of that, they decided to send us in the one theater where I did not particularly want to go, to Palestine. So we were sent to Palestine, and first up in the Gaza area and then to Teletvinsky.
I was trying to find what Teletvinsky was called now, because we couldn't find it on the map, and actually we couldn't find it on old maps either.
Well, that was the name that I had. I was not there very long, but it was, I shall say, a British barracks is too good.
An outpost?
It's not an outpost. The outpost would be Gaza, because nothing much happened there. From there, they went into Tel Aviv, for example, on one occasion. I was getting very angry at them, but that's beside the point. I didn't go on this, but they were all in favor. Bevin's policy was anti-Jewish and pro-Arab. You probably know that as well as I do. In fact, he made a statement at some stage to say that he would solve the problem. And he didn't solve the problem, and he handed it then. He evacuated. There were lots of things, but Israelis will be able to tell you much more of the anti-Jewish policy. And it was only after they used to hang Irgun or fighters that they had caught and so on. And then Irgun got 2 British sergeants. They were actually intelligence sergeants, caught them, and they threatened that they would retaliate, which they did, and they hung these 2, which was a pity. But after that, the hanging of Jewish Irgun or other fighters stopped. There were a few Jewish boys in that, and when it became very obvious that, and the British powers, that they were really much more interested in siding with the Arabs there against, the Jewish boys were taken out of the unit and sent to Egypt to work in POW camps. And so the rest of my work was really in POW camps, again on interpreter and intelligence work, and identifying potential war criminals and so on. But it was all a waste of time. Britain had lost its interest in the war criminals. Their main interest was what was happening in Greece, where there was a big communist problem going on there. It was really largely a waste of time.
And what happened in the end to these people, the prisoners of war?
Well, sent back. Nothing happened.
Nothing.
I took one group, okay, you asked something. Later, when I was stationed in Fayed and Fanar, I took one group to Port Said. And the reason was, these were all German spies. Now, Amin spies, who had, most of them, had been captured in Iran, or what was then Persia. Some of them were apparently civilians, German civilians. Others were from the, up there was the army.
Is it the regular army?
Yes, but there was the SS and the Gestapo and so on, and there up there was the military side of it that had been captured. So there were all sorts of individuals that were there. It's really incredible. I had the job to take them in a lorry, 10 or 12 of them, with a couple of squaddies with me through a lot of that to Port Said, to be sent back to the UK initially, but actually to be employed in Berlin, which at that time was the last thing I wanted to. The first people to be repatriated, to the best of my knowledge, from the worst people that I would have thought should have been hung. However, that was the job. I had my pistol there, and I don't think they had any intention of escaping at all. They knew that what was going to happen. They were going to be used for intelligence work against the Russian sector. I mean, all I did was make sure that they arrived at the other side with my two squaddies.
So say again, they were going to be used in intelligence...
Against the Russians.
Against the Russians. Mm-hmm.
In Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where they finally went. But I lost all further contact. I'm pretty sure that's where they were used.
It was interesting to some extent. And then my time was up, and I was released in 1947, in September 1947, with having reached the dizzy heights of war substances sergeant.
And what age were you then?
In 1947, I was 23.
And you'd say you're a substantive sergeant. Is that right? Is there a word, substantive
war
sergeant?
War substantive. In other words, the regulars didn't have the war substantive. It meant that as soon as the war finished, as far as they were concerned, the rank could be reduced or changed.
Right.
Because of money, but it was nice at least to have the war substantive, which means once there was a war. But that was irrelevant. That rank was arrived at on extra regimental duties. I hope you have got there, because it was extra regimental duties in prisoner war camps. The prisoners of war were German prisoners of war who had been captured mainly in the Aegean area. Some, there were all sorts, and if you want me to enlarge slightly,
yes,
on
please.
That, there were hardliners, that was hardline Nazis, that had already been identified by the time I get the majority of them. Then there were people that were involved, but in some cases involved in war crimes, which were of various different types that had been elucidated by other people who had earlier interrogated them, but couldn't easily be proved. So they were lower category. So they were C's or B's. C-plus was the real hardcore. The B's were non-political almost, and the A's were clearly totally non-political. And they were usually quite young. And some of the clerics that we employed were mainly, at least that I employed, were all A's. So the A, they were nearly my age or very close to it. And there was no clear political problem. I should enlarge a bit more on that. I served in two different prisoner of war camps. That was because the Jewish people in the parachute regiment were sent out of Palestine, the majority, except those who protested and wanted to serve there, and there were very few, I don't know, they could say they wanted to stay with the regiment in which they always were. Well, I didn't have much choice, and it never even occurred. So they were sent out. There were, in my unit, there were maybe between 6 and 10 out of the 400 or 500 people that we were, a small group. And earlier, before we went to Palestine and so on, I was in the I section, that was the intelligence section of the unit. There was a private, again, if you want me to say a bit more, I'm very happy to, but it may not be relevant, because eventually, I left their I section when the war had finished, and we were, or just before the war had finished, we were due to drop probably on the Japanese mainland, the whole unit. And I learned for a very short time, learned is the wrong word because I've forgotten most of it, to identify Japanese regiment units so that from maps, if we got some maps, we were meant to read it. Total waste of time. I couldn't do anything of this sort. Now, our seaborne party, that means the party to accept the regiment, prepare things for it, had already gone out to India. We were still training in Britain, but the war then finished. That was after the Japanese surrendered. So Bevin decided to send the unit to Palestine, where there were real problems. Mm-hmm. That was the last place I wanted to go to. I actually spoke to Captain Bengeli. He had been a captain in the Paris. The name Bengeli is Cornish, I think. Anyway, he persuaded me that I'd been in the unit and he would be prepared to try to help me to look for my parents. But I really should show some esprit de corps and decide that I'd been part of the unit for some time. So I didn't insist on trying to get to Europe after the war.
So was it when you were 23 and released, did you come back to Scotland or stay in England at that point?
No, I went to England. I went to Birmingham. I had decided for some time that I ought to do something positive rather than pretty negative things. And I needed to get back to the educational level that I expected, or that I should say that my parents would have expected me to reach. When we were demobbed, my brother and I were together and came together again at that time. He incidentally had been earlier, and he was sent to OCTU, Officers Training Corps, and he just made that at the end of 45, or just so. Neither of us actually, he was in the Royal Warwicks, and neither of us actually did anything really useful during our army careers.
I was under the impression that you had to be in a Jewish brigade. As somebody coming from abroad, you were allowed to serve.
At that time, yes, absolutely.
Because it was later in the war then.
That was later in the war, it was 44, and there was no question about that.
That's interesting. Then after the war ended, what happened?
When we came out, both of us wanted to get our university education. My brother, who had been doing his
his matriculation and his hires in Coventry, because we had been quite separated. Whereas I was on the farm, he got an FETS grant, further education and training grants. In my case, it was refused because I'd been in farming and I'd not been studying, apparently, at that time. So I got nothing from that. However, my brother and I, for the first year, shared, actually, his grant. But then he went to University College London, whereas I had set my matriculation, his mature matriculation, both of us had to sit mature matriculation, into Birmingham University. So they had to offer me a place. So after the first year, I got a grant from Birmingham itself. I also had some help from the family, Mr. and Mrs. Peskin, who are dead now, who had actually guaranteed for us children when we first came over as children, aged at that time 14 and 13. So I got a grant from Birmingham, not from the university, but from the city. And from then onwards, we went slightly separate ways. There were two things that I should say. First of all, going back early to when we first came over in England, we were both going to be interviewed by educational psychologists. We had, of course, done no educational work at all for the last year in Vienna after Hitler came and we were thrown out of our school. And this was nearly a year later. And this man had obviously been educated beyond his intellectual capacity. And he decided we were not worth educating. That is how I actually was interested in farming, and I was not sent to a farming college, but to work as a pupil on a pretty dreadful farmer.
How did he decide you weren't worthy of educating?
He tried to interview me in Latin. He said, I see you have done Latin for at least a couple of years and so on. Now, I don't know whether you have done Latin at all, but certainly not colloquial Latin.
No.
I obviously could not possibly hold an interview in Latin. That's the way it goes. A second time, almost the same thing happened to us when we got into Birmingham University, potentially into Birmingham University, because we had taken this mature matriculation into the university itself. There was a man, that admissions tutor, I don't know if I should mention his name, but okay, his name was Dr. Ibs at that time. Major Ibs, he called himself, because he was something in the territorial army, but he had not done very much elsewhere. He was an awful lecturer, he lectured in heat. However, he interviewed us, he offered me mining engineering, in which I had absolutely no interest whatsoever. And he offered Gerald, my brother, a year below what he could already enter in, because Gerald had taken an intermediate just before joining the Army, London Intermediate. I had learned matric, but that didn't make... We both didn't accept this. Eventually, he had to offer something else. He offered me the botany and biology, and then from then onward, it went on. But he said, you would have been better off if both of you had failed. He obviously didn't like refugees, or at least like... Don't forget, we were young men then. We were experienced. We had been living for quite a long time in the army and made reasonable progress there.